What up, everybody? You're now tuned into the true definition of a sports fanatic. I am your host, Brandon Lampley, coming to you on a Wednesday afternoon. And it's November 6th already. The year is almost gone. I can't believe it. It has flew by, absolutely flown by. It's going to be Thanksgiving in a couple of weeks. It's going to be Christmas soon. And before you know it, we'll be singing Auld Lang Syne for New Year's. But we're going to get into some sports today. Got a few topics. It's not much. But first and foremost, got to talk about Popeye's bringing his chicken sandwich back. Now, I knew eventually they were going to bring it back because the demand for it was so high and people were just so enamored with the sandwich and whatnot. I still haven't had one. Don't really care to have one. I mean, the Chick-fil-A sandwich is good enough for me. I might try one day. Who knows? But as long as those lines are the way they are, I'm not sitting in line for 30 minutes to an hour to get a doggone chicken sandwich. I'm just not doing it. And then, man, it's crazy. People going, and it's not people going crazy over the sandwich per se. Anywhere you have a bunch of people, you have crowds, there's a chance for conflict. And conflict will happen. So it wouldn't matter what the product is. As long as there are large crowds, you're going to have disagreements. You're going to have impatience. You're going to have violence. You might have death. I just seen somebody got stabbed to death, I think, in Georgia, like in Atlanta or outside Atlanta, somewhere in that area, general area, at a Popeye's, because people was getting their chicken sandwiches. Now, that's crazy. You got to spend probably the rest of your life in prison over a chicken sandwich. Now, I'm sure the disagreement wasn't exactly about the chicken sandwich, but that's the reason you were there. That's the reason why the other person was there. And now you're going to be in prison the rest of your life for killing somebody over a chicken sandwich. And then the person who died, I mean, imagine getting up to the pearly gates and you go, Jesus, I don't know what happened. One minute we was in line, the dude said something about my mama. I swung, he pulled out a knife and stabbed me. I'm here. There's nothing else we can do about it. But man, people calm down about this chicken sandwich, man. It's getting crazy. Because people want to tie this to black people acting crazy over chicken. But let's not forget about the soccer moms who beat people up during Black Friday to get the same TV they just had the day before, but it's $50 or less. So let's not get crazy here. But anyway, we're going to get into some sports. And to start off the show, I got to talk about the GOAT. The greatest of all time. That man from Akron, Ohio, LeBron James. LeBron James last night finished up his third triple-double in a row. First player since Magic Johnson to do it in the Lakers uniform, I think back in 1987. I think he's one of the oldest players at 34 years young to have three straight triple-doubles. And, of course, the Lakers beat the Bulls. But what was interesting in that game is Anthony Davis is in foul trouble. LeBron is pretty much exhausted in the fourth. And Kyle Kuzma comes in and drops 11 of his 15 in the fourth and help power them to a win. Now, but that's how it's going to be. From time to time, AD is going to get in foul trouble. LeBron's going to be exhausted because, you know, he's averaging a triple-double. And you're going to need other guys to step up. That's where Kuzma comes in. That's where Dwight Howard comes in. That's where Rondo comes in. That's where Dudley comes in. That's where Cook comes in. That's where JaVale McGee comes in. You name it. The second unit, well, it'll take some time, but they'll solidify that second unit. And hopefully Rondo can stay healthy and run that second unit. Because you have to have depth. Especially if you're going to beat the Clippers, you have to have depth. Because right now, the Clippers is the only team standing in the way of the Lakers from going to the NBA Finals. I mean, man, it's amazing. My dude misses one postseason. Just one. Pulled his groin. Team misses the postseason. And they're already on to the next. They first they wanted to crown KD. KD's the best player in the world. Nope. Now they want to crown Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard's the best player in the world. Nope. They're not. He's not ready to give up the crown just yet. Now, Father Time is undefeated. And the time is coming for, you know, somebody else to take the crown sooner than later. But for right now, it still belongs to LeBron James. Oh, how soon we forget. Speaking of Kawhi Leonard. So Kawhi has been taking some games off due to, you know, load management. Where I'm pretty sure they put a plan together before the season where he pretty much will rest for 25% of the 82-game schedule. In those nights where he don't play, it'll be load management, so he'll be fresh for the playoffs. And I really have no problem with this because the importance is put on the postseason anyway. The regular season's too long. It's 82 games. The games are really not that meaningful because at 41 and 41, I can get me an 8 seed. And seeding really doesn't matter at the end of the day. It doesn't. So, like, take the Golden State Warriors, for example. Have won 3 titles in the last couple of years. If they had went in as the 8 seed any of those previous years they won a title, it wouldn't have mattered. They were still going to clean the clock of anybody they played. It would not have mattered. Home court advantage matters somewhat. But does it really matter? I don't think so. Now, of course, role players play better at home, statistically. But, dude, when you have superstars, man, it's not really going to matter. But because of this long season, there's not an onus put on the regular season. And so players are going to take games off. So you have networks like ESPN complaining because it's a nationally televised ESPN game, and your best players aren't on the floor. It's not the players' fault. Hey, Kawhi's doing what's best for Kawhi because Kawhi knows you're going to judge Kawhi off of titles. KD knew you were going to judge him off of titles. That's why he went to Golden State. That is the standard. If you want to win titles, you need to do what's best for you, your team, your body, your load management, in order to win said title. And it worked for Kawhi last year. I didn't hear anybody talking about him taking off games with Toronto. No, and maybe they thought he was kind of still dealing with the injury that coming from San Antonio. But, hey, it showed you it worked. He averaged the most minutes in the playoffs last year. It was the MVP of the finals and absolutely destroyed the Golden State Warriors. ESPN and the ESPN analysts can cry all they want and talk about the integrity of the game and cheating the fans and all of that stuff. But, hey, when I'm holding that trophy and I got that ring on my finger, all of it is white noise. It is what it is. Now, moving on, switch up topic. We're going to talk about NFL football. And this Sunday was not a good Sunday. Well, last Sunday was not a good Sunday to be a Jaguars fan. How do you go across the pond and lay the biggest of eggs? Got embarrassed by the Houston Texans, man. And it's so funny. Listening to local media here and on their radio shows and things like that, they talked about how, oh, man, the camaraderie is up and, you know, guys are, you know, the team has been galvanized and the mood around the team is much better. And they basically were implying that now that Jalen Ramsey's gone and the distraction is gone, things are so much better. And I could see that whole situation weighing on somewhat weighing on the players, but those dudes went out there and played ball. I don't think they really cared. But all of a sudden, now it's been a lot of arguing back and forth on the sideline between the players. Now it seems to be kind of tense in the locker room. I wonder what happened. Dude, of course you're going to have camaraderie and look like everything's peachy keen when you play two of the worst teams in the NFL, in the Jets and the Bengals, and you win. Of course, everything's great. It's sunshine and rainbows puppies and candy kisses. But then you go up against a basically a Super Bowl contender in Houston, because with Deshaun Watson, man, the sky's the limit for them. They punch you square in the mouth and you fall apart. I feel like Blue from Remember the Titans. We fall apart like we ain't a damn bit of nothing. And y'all think we done won something? Man, that ain't nothing, y'all. Man, I won't talk about them no more. They really, really bother me. And now Nick Foles is back. And people think Nick Foles is the savior. It was some people not on the Minshew train. And, you know, you have your opinions or whatever. But people want Nick Foles back because he was a Super Bowl MVP and whatnot and all of that stuff. Hey, that's fine and cool. He's back. We're 4-5. And if Nick Foles is who you said he is, then he should lead us to the playoffs. Nothing less. But I'm telling you right now, the issues that are lingering for the Jaguars will not be solved by Nick Foles under center. It won't. He doesn't solve our issue at tight end. He doesn't solve our issue at wide receiver, where you have DJ Chark and just a bunch of guys. No disrespect to D.D. Westbrook and Chris Conley and Keelan Cole and those guys, but it's DJ Chark and pretty much it, man. Because those guys can't win their one-on-ones. Gardner Minshew kept holding the ball and not getting the ball out of his hands Sunday because he didn't like what he saw. DJ Chark is covered, and nobody else could win their one-on-ones. Nick Foles definitely doesn't he doesn't solve your run defense, who we've been gashed a couple of times this year. Nick Foles doesn't solve Trey Herndon. Now, don't get me wrong, Trey Herndon played well against the Jets. That was the Jets. As long as 37 is on the field, teams are going to go at him. And can he hold up? He didn't play particularly bad Sunday that I saw against the Texans. You know, and I guess that's a good thing because I didn't see him getting flamed. But, dude, man, it is what it is. But, Jag fans, I hope you get what you're looking for in Nick Foles. Me, personally, I would roll with Gardner Minshew, but that's just me. We'll see what happens. Now, moving on to some other games that I saw Sunday. The Sunday night, Baltimore versus New England. Man, that was a much-anticipated game. I wanted to make sure I was had all my snacks, my drinks, whatever, because I wasn't going to move because I wanted to watch every snap of that game. And it did not disappoint, man. It was must-see TV. And, of course, I already talked about Lamar Jackson. I've talked about Lamar Jackson plenty of times. And I told you he should be a Jaguar. He shouldn't be a Raven. But, dude, Lamar Jackson is great. He's great. I don't think that we've seen the type of athlete that Lamar is at the quarterback position. Now, don't get me wrong. You got Michael Vick. You got Randall Cunningham. You got Cam Newton. You got a lot of athletic guys now. But it's something different about Lamar, man. Lamar is just his speed is deceptive, man, because sometimes it doesn't look like Lamar's moving, but he's really moving. And he's very slippery in the pocket. Now, there were times against New England where, especially on one play, where it looked like there was no lane for him to run, and he found a lane and got up the field. Now, I seen, you know, some outlets talking about they were more impressed with New England against Baltimore because of the adjustments New England made and how they slowed Baltimore down. And, you know, I could see that argument a little bit. And New England made uncharacteristic mistakes, like the fumble by Edelman, the interception by Tom Brady that Earl Thomas picked off, and the jumping off sides on fourth down, giving the ball back to the Ravens and for them scoring a touchdown instead of kicking a field goal. No, those are uncharacteristic things. You won't get that in the playoff game. You know, I's will be dotted and T's will be crossed in the playoff game. You're going to get their best game. But even with all that said, the Ravens still dominated them. And from what I saw from the Ravens offense, they run the pistol more than any other team in the NFL combined. But even with what the play calling they had Sunday night, I don't think they threw the kitchen sink at them, because it's in the back of your mind as a coaching staff that you are going to see these guys again in the playoffs. So I'm not going to throw the kitchen sink at you. I'm going to give you a taste of it. It's not necessarily watered down, but I'm not giving you everything. I'm not showing my whole hand. I'm only going to show you half. Then when we see you again in the playoffs, I'm going to throw a few wrinkles in there, a few things that you haven't seen. Now, I had saw this up close in a high school game. One of the greatest coaches, I think, in Jacksonville high school football history, his name is Corky Rogers. Coached at Robert E. Lee and coached at Bowles High School. Now, the Bowles, I watched them play against Raines High School, one of the top high school programs in all of Jacksonville. My little brother played for Raines High School, and they played Bowles. His first year there, they played Bowles in the regular season, and they played them in the playoffs. Now, in the regular season game, they lost a very close game, and with a bit of a controversial call with now Alabama quarterback Mac Jones fumbling the ball that was clearly a fumble, but they ruled it a forward pass, and they gave the ball back to Bowles, and Raines would have had a chance to win that game, but they ended up losing, I think, by a point or two. But in that game, the play calling for Bowles was very vanilla. They didn't throw a whole lot at Raines, and it was a very close game. But then, in the playoff, Corky Rogers unleashed the dogs, and I think beat them by 40. The final score was like 60-20 or something like that. So I expect the Ravens to do the same thing. They didn't show their full hand Sunday night, but they know when they see Bill Belichick again, he's going to be ready for that pistol. And that playoff game is going to – I think that's going to be one of the best playoff games out of the whole postseason. I can't wait. Ravens, Patriots. I hope it happens. Oh, another good game I saw was the Green Bay Packers versus the Los Angeles Chargers. Oh, I got that right. I usually call them the San Diego Chargers. Got it right on the first time. But the Chargers absolutely dominated the Packers. And I had somebody ask me, you know, was it just poor play by the Packers, or was it that are the Chargers that good? And I think it's somewhere in the middle, but I lean more towards the Chargers being that good because, remember, they've dealt with so many injuries already this year. They still don't have Derwin James back. They just got Melvin Ingram back. And they hadn't had Melvin Gordon for, the first 3-4 weeks of the season. So he's starting to round into shape. Mike Williams has missed time. He's on my fantasy team, so I know for sure this dude has missed some time. So they're starting to round into form. They're getting their guys back. Derwin James comes back in a little bit. And they're outside of the Eagles and maybe the Vikings. The Chargers have one of the top talented rosters as far as player for player, one of the most talented rosters in the entire NFL. And if they can get healthy, man, down the stretch, the Chargers are going to be dangerous. They're going to vie for a wild card spot, and they're going to be a tough out come December and January. Also got a chance to see two teams up and close, one in particular, number one pick Kyler Murray with the Arizona Cardinals, I was about to say Cincinnati Cardinals, and the San Francisco 49ers. Now, I will say the 49ers didn't look as impressive as I've seen them in other games, especially when they destroyed the Panthers 2 weeks ago. Their defense has some cracks. It's still a good defense. But, man, Kenyon Drake, fresh off of Miami Beach, dropped, I think, 160 total yards and a touchdown on him, which was insane. But, hey, what do you expect from a former Alabama Roll Tider? Then also, Kyler Murray, I'm hopeful for Kyler Murray. Yeah, people, you know, laugh at him and, you know, job him because he's short. He's 5'10". But I think Kyler Murray has some promise, man. That marriage between him and Cliff Kingsbury, it might work. You know, Cliff Kingsbury might not be the coach to, you know, succeed with him. But I think Kyler Murray can succeed in this league just from what I saw the other night, man. And he's a better athlete than you think, man. He's very slippery. And then You know, Jimmy Garoppolo, yeah, he threw for 4 touchdowns. And I give Jimmy G a little bit of grief because I don't think he's as good as people have hyped him up to be. But yet he is still a developing quarterback because it's crazy that Baker Mayfield has more starts than Jimmy Garoppolo, which is crazy to me. But you forget how long he sat behind Brady. And I'll still give him some time. But I think once they get into the playoffs and they go up against top competition, Jimmy G is going to be their weakness. Now, he might not always be that. And he has one of the best in his corner in Kyle Shanahan, who is an excellent, excellent play caller. And they're going to get Juszczyk back. And I think their two tackles that they're missing, they're going to get both of them back. So they're going to get more healthy to get this stretch run to get ready to go into the playoffs. But, you know, overall, them going up against the Cardinals, which I think is the Cardinals are better than you thought. They were 3-3-1, but they're 3-4. They're better than you thought. And the 49ers might not be as good as you think, but they're still pretty good. Now, two teams I got to talk about, man, and just – number one, I've talked about the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns, I've said from the beginning, if it did not go well early, it was going to be a disaster. It was a tinderbox ready to go up in flames. And it's almost there. It's almost there. It's very close. I think they're 2-6 right now. And you could just see the disappointment and on Odell Beckham's face and him trying his best to hold it together and be mature. You can see it on his face. He's trying. He's trying his hardest. Because, man, I don't blame him, man. It's tough. Baker Mayfield has not been good, man. And he's really trying to be a mature football player about this. But, man, I think the man can only take so much before, we got a Baker Mayfield problem. But besides a Baker Mayfield problem, I think he got a Freddie Kitchens problem. I don't think Freddie Kitchens is a good coach, at least not a good head coach. He might be a good offensive coordinator, but I don't think he's a good head coach. I think they should have gave the job to Greg Williams and let Freddie Kitchens be the OC. That would have made a lot more sense because Freddie Kitchens, man, he's been subpar. And then it's not only the offense struggling, he's made questionable decisions as a head coach in game. So he's not a great game manager. So I think with the Browns, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. I don't see them righting the ship at any point in the next couple of weeks. I don't. Now, on the flip side of that, you got the Chicago Bears who got beat by the Philadelphia Eagles. Mitchell Trubisky needs to go. It's time to move on. Now, I got a feeling they're going to run it back with him in 2020 because he had a great year last year. He's struggling this year. And the investment and the commitment they've made to him, trading away assets in order to go get him, and you got to get something in return for the investment that you've made. But because of that, if he's allowed to continue to hamstring them, he's going to set them back even more time. Because I can't remember who said it, but I've heard it before, that when you draft the wrong quarterback, it sets your franchise back 4 years. And then if you don't correct it early, he's going to set you back even more. So now if you don't move off of Mitchell Trubisky, Chicago, they have a love-hate relationship seemingly with quarterbacks anyway, man. I mean, before Trubisky, the only notable one was, Jay Cutler? And Jay Cutler was, he was decent. Starting caliber quarterback, middle of the pack. And then before that, man, I really, off the top of my head, notable quarterbacks that played for the Bears that were really good. Jim McMahon, off the top of my head, And yeah, that's about it. I can't think of any more. And that's crazy. I mean, they've always been known for defense, but dude, this defense is being wasted. They're being wasted right now on Mitchell Trubisky. And I know what this is. I've seen it before, up close and personal. It's the 2018 Jaguars all over again. Defense goes on a historic run, make it to the playoffs, even though they didn't make it to the NFC Championship game like the Jaguars did on the AFC side. But your defense has a historic run, make the playoffs, and then the next year, which Jaguars, they recommitted to Blake Bortles, which was the dumbest thing. So I got to give the Bears a little more credit because at least they're working with a third-year player and not a fifth-year player in Blake Bortles, which you pretty much knew what he was. But now with this season, the Bears, you know what he is now. And I think you should move on. But GMs and owners, they fall in love with players, and they always want to be right. They don't want to be seen as wrong. They don't want to move off certain players because they don't want to admit mistakes. But I think that's what makes Bill Belichick so great, is that, hey, this was a bad investment. It's time to move on. And he moves on. I remember the Seahawks did it a couple years ago. Well, I say a couple years ago, but earlier this decade with Percy Harvin. I couldn't believe that they signed Percy Harvin to number one wide receiver money when Percy Harvin had never had 1,000 yards. He was always injured. And I wouldn't say a malcontent, but, you know, it was known that Percy had a bit of an attitude problem. It was an issue. So when they signed him to that, I was like, man, I don't think that's a good move. I had a buddy of mine, he was like, nah, man, Percy's great. Percy this? I said, yeah, Percy is great. Percy is a playmaker. I say, but the contract they signed him to, it's not going to work. And sure enough, I think it was 1 year he was with the Seahawks. It was 1 year, 1 or 2 years, or maybe a year and a half. Now, he helped them win the Super Bowl because he had a kickoff return, but they would have won that Super Bowl anyway without that kickoff return because they was absolutely dominating the Denver Broncos. But they admitted their mistake, and they moved on and moved forward. That's what you have to do here, Chicago. Hey, it is what it is. And last but not least, switch topics, which we're going to stay in football. We're going to talk college football. And you know what's coming up this Saturday. Do I even need to say it? Okay, yeah, I do need to say it because, you know, everybody's not a football fan like me. But Alabama LSU. It's coming up. Don't know if Tua Tagovailoa is going to play. I hope he plays. But, man, this is going to be a great game because LSU's tough, man. LSU is going to be a tough out. Joe Burrow is playing Heisman-type football right now at the quarterback position for LSU. They have one of the best receiving corps outside of Alabama in the nation, and they have a great defense. So this is going to be a slugfest, knocked down, dragged out, black and blue slugfest. And, of course, this matchup has huge playoff implications. Because the college football playoff ranking came out, I think, last night, the other night. One of those nights, I didn't get to see it. But they had Ohio State number one, LSU two, Bama three, Penn State four, Clemson five, Georgia six, Oregon seven, Utah eight, Oklahoma way down at nine, Florida drops to 10, Auburn at 11, Baylor at 12, even though they're undefeated at 8-0, 13 Wisconsin, 14 Michigan, 15 Notre Dame, 16 Kansas State, 17 Minnesota, 18 Iowa, 19 Wake Forest, 20 Cincinnati, 21 Memphis, 22 Boise State, 23 Oklahoma State, 24 Navy, 25 SMU. Now, I gave you the whole list, but focus on the top six, which is Ohio State, LSU, Bama, Penn State, Clemson, and Georgia. Now, it's interesting they put Ohio State number one. Might have put LSU right now at number one, but, you know, you could flip-flop them. But Penn State at four, I think is good. I might have put Clemson at four instead of and put Penn State at five, but, you know, you could flip-flop them. But it's crazy that, you know, Clemson at five is interesting to me because I think Clemson being at five is somewhat their resume this year, who they played and who they've beaten factors into it. But it's all on the shoulders of one player, and that's their quarterback, Trevor Lawrence. If Trevor had looked like he did at any point last year, this season, if he had looked like he did last year, just looked the way he looked last year, this year, Clemson would be number one because they would look unstoppable. They don't look unstoppable this year. And that one loss, that 1 point loss to North Carolina really, really hurts them right now. Now, not 1 point loss, but the 1 point win against North Carolina really hurts them right now. And I think when they talked about Alabama, they weren't impressed with the Duke win. But hey, I'm pretty sure if Alabama could schedule somebody better than Duke to start off the season, they probably would have. But what teams really want to wreck their season early in the year with a loss to Alabama? So you only can play who will schedule you. And then Penn State at four. I mean, but just looking at it, even the teams that are at 5, 6, 7, and 8, and 9, which Oklahoma at 9, they still have a chance because Alabama and LSU are going to play each other. So they're going to knock one of them going to knock each other out of the top four. Ohio State plays Penn State later on this month. So one of them will drop out of the top four. So that leaves Clemson is most likely going to be in. I don't see them losing the game the rest of this year. And they'll get one of those spots vacated by Ohio State, LSU, Bama, or Penn State. Same with Georgia at 7-1. If Georgia runs the table and they beat either LSU or Alabama in the SEC championship game, they're in the playoff. See, Oregon has an outside shot. Utah has an outside shot. Oklahoma, who has Baylor coming up soon, they have an outside shot. Now, the rest of them with two losses, you know, yeah. But the top nine right now, it's going to change in the next couple of weeks because a lot of these guys play each other. So it's going to be must-see TV down the stretch to see who makes the playoffs in college football. Speaking of the playoffs, a team that's on the opposite end of playoff contention – They've been terrible pretty much all year. They have not looked good. The Florida State Seminoles fired their head coach, Willie Taggart. Now, this is Willie Taggart's – was in the middle of his second year at Florida State. And granted, at times, yes, it looked bad. It looked very, very bad sometimes. But really, the middle of his second year – I was listening to Bomani Jones at ESPN. And Bomani Jones said that, Scott Frost at Nebraska has looked awful. And at no point has people talked about him losing his job at all. Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee, same thing. Tennessee has lost to every rival you can think of. No one's talking about Jeremy Pruitt losing his job. But yet Willie Taggart has lost his job. And he talked about how black coaches really don't get a lot of rope. And they don't. I really don't think they do. I don't think they get a lot of rope. And it did not help that he's following Jimbo Fisher, who won a title in 2013. That's always tough shoes to fill. So you still have a fan base, a university, a city whose expectation is through the roof. But the team is in rebuilding. Willie Taggart needed to rebuild this team from the ground up. And it was going to be ugly before it got better. But we'll never know if he's going to succeed or would have succeeded because they fired him. This was too soon. A year and a half? The man has only coached 20 games. And like I said, yeah, sometimes it has not looked good. But they were acting like this roster was like just removed from a title. and he's taking a great roster and he's bringing it down. This wasn't a good roster that Jimbo Fisher left behind. You have a playmaker here or there, but overall, this team is not good. And it's going to show with the next head coach. Now, I think Florida State, number one, they're going to make a splash higher. I've heard Lane Kiffin. I've heard Mike Leach, PJ Fleck, you name it. They want to make a splash with this next head coach. Because this is an upper echelon job in college football. But, man, I don't like the way this has been done. And Willie Taggart, good guy, class act, you know, couldn't find a better person. But to do him like this, man, it's unacceptable. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is it. Gotta wrap it up for today. I'll go home, do some more research, finish watching BoJack Horseman. Man, if you never watched BoJack Horseman on Netflix, if you're into cartoons, but it's not very cartoony, and it's somewhat of a comedy. It has its funny moments, but deal with more like more real life situations. It kind of puts you in your feelings a little bit. But it's a great show. I highly suggest you watch BoJack Horseman. So go home, do that, and please remember to like, share, and subscribe. Share on all my platforms, from Spotify to Google Play to CastBox to Anchor. Spread the word, all that other stuff. Everything I talk about at the end of every show, yada, yada, yada. Wash, rinse, repeat. But until next time, I'll talk to you guys later. Peace.